You're listening to The World's Talking with Dave O'Grady. Don't forget, if you have a story, an internet forum, a discussion you want to have, email theworldstalking@gmail.com. That's theworldstalking@gmail.com. Don't forget to click like on Facebook, like on Twitter, like on everything, and we'll chat to you then. Welcome again to the Why Big Footy Show with Dave O'Grady. What a show we've got, previewing Ireland's tough clash with Estonia in the playoff qualifiers. It's going to be an interesting one. Joining us on the programme is John in Dublin again. How are you, John? Are you well?
How you doing?
And making his debut for the first time is James, an avid Irish fan who's in London. Now, James, you have a little bit of a funny story. You actually know John. This is a bit of a strange one, is that right?
I do know John, if it's the same John. He went to school in Kilkenny, where I'm from. Is that right, John?
It is true, actually, yeah, unfortunately.
But yeah.
Only joke. Because what, yeah, when I heard the name, there's not too many James Carew around, so I was kind of thinking that could be him.
Yeah, James, you were telling me off-air that there was...
Certainly not a lot of James Carews.
There was a little story about how you met James, and it was you seen him again underneath the Eiffel Tower. It sounded a little bit romantic there.
Yeah, the last time I saw John was under the Eiffel Tower, and he was all dressed up to go out on the town, I think. And that was the playoff in Paris. Is that right, John?
Yeah, that was actually the night before the playoff.
And, okay.
When we were heading out. I think if I wasn't wearing an Ireland jersey, so I probably looked dressed up compared to everyone else. That was the only difference, really.
Yeah, well, we might leave that little bit of romance in there, lads, towards the end of the show. Now, just a quick one, James. You've got a Brazilian girlfriend, and she goes to all the friendlies with you. And what you were telling me was that you actually brought her to the Ireland-Brazil friendly match at in London that time. That must have been an interesting one.
Yeah, it was. I suppose I managed to bag myself a Brazilian girlfriend. We actually met in an Irish pub. So when Ireland were playing Brazil over here, the natural thing to do was to go along with a bunch of her friends and my friends. So, yeah, it was great fun, I have to say. Well, the start of the night was great fun. The end of the night didn't go down too well. Yeah, a bit of a domestic afterwards because of the football match.
Oh dear, oh dear, oh dear. Well, Paul, you're joining us as well, and you're living in London again. Paul, you're not in this little, you're not making this a trio of the John, James and Paul affair, is it? Or you certainly don't know James there in London, no?
No, I was at the Brazil game though, so maybe I might have spotted him in the crowd.
you might have seen a few pint glasses being chucked at me or something like that.
Oh dear, oh dear, dear, oh dear, dear, oh dear. And we're delighted to be joined by our special guest this evening, Mark Holmes. And Mark, from teamtalk.com, Sky Sports, Sporting Life and Football 365, you're very welcome to the show.
Hi Dave, nice to be on.
Now lads, let's just get down to business straight away, and the main talking point is Ireland's playoff clash with Estonia on Friday in Tallinn. John, looking to this game, I suppose the main thing for most Irish fans is to get out of there with 3 points. Do you think it's going to come easily? Do you think it's going to be a tough game? What do you reckon, John?
Well, in the away leg, I don't think getting a win is the be-all and end-all. I think scoring a goal is the main thing. I'd be happy enough to come out of there with a 1-1. Obviously a 1-0 or even a 2-0 would be better. But if we could just get an away goal, a 1-1 is much better than a 0-0. Because there'd be less pressure coming back to the home leg. But we're definitely good enough to beat them over there. I don't think we'll set out too adventurous. I don't think you'll see a team play as they did in Paris 2 years ago. I think it'd be much more conservative. Because I think Trapp would also be happy to play for a draw, maybe a score draw. But I don't know, who knows? Hopefully we can come out and play.
Yeah.
Play some football, which maybe we haven't seen enough of.
Yeah, Paul, I want to put that to you. He's hoping, John there, hoping that Ireland can come out and play a bit of football. But let me put this to you. A lot of people, we know Trapattoni is a bit of a superstitious man, and a lot of people are saying, well, the match is going to be played on the 11th of the 11th, 2011. If you were a betting man, would you go for a 1-1 draw to complete it?
If we score in the 41st minute of the second half, that'll be the 11th minute. Well, the 11th minute of 11. 11-11-11-11-11. Maybe even under 11 seconds. But anyway, yeah. I agree with John on that. I think, Trapp has set out a stall. I think it looks like he'll go with Walters up front. So we might see a bit of football by Walters bringing in the two wingers and stuff like that, which is something that he looks very capable. He's a very direct runner as well. On the scoreline, yeah, I really feel we have to at least score one goal. Obviously, I don't want us to lose 2-1, but I would prefer losing 2-1 than drawing 0-0, to be honest. That's how I'd prefer it. Although I wouldn't be happy and I'd be disgusted. In the cup, looking at Tuesday, I'd actually probably be happier with that. But I suspect we'll get a goal. I do unfortunately think it'll be a draw, though. Whether it's a 1-1 or a 2-2, I don't know if we'll come out with the win on Friday.
Yeah, James, would you go along with that point that Paul was making there? He doesn't reckon we'll come out with the win, but he'd be delighted for a score draw. It is Estonia at the end of the day. Mind you, they did come through a very tough group in the Euros, but would you be hoping for along the same, a draw? Is that not a culture that's seeping into Irish football since the Stan era? Remember, I'd be delighted to get out of Croke Park with a draw kind of thing, but what do you think?
Yeah, I've been thinking about this a lot this week, and I think Estonia would be delighted to come away with a draw from the home leg, because we know they had two good away wins in the group, and there's no pressure on them. They'll be able to let loose in Dublin. I think they'll be ecstatic coming to Dublin to be still in the tie. All their confidence has been built on the road in the group. If we could look at it from their point of view, all the news coming from Dublin is Ireland missing strikers, goalkeeper didn't train today. They'll be relishing it. I think we're afraid because of some of the performances we put in during the group. But if we said at the start, if we'd drawn Estonia in the qualifying group, we'd be saying 6 points is a must, anything less is a disaster.
Yeah.
I don't see what's changed because we've got them in a playoff, except maybe that it's two cup finals. But, I keep going over this over and over in my head, and they had brilliant results and away from home. They'd be coming to Dublin full of confidence, but they lost to the Faroe Islands. And I can't get that out of my head every time I think about this game.
Okay. Well, I want to bring Mark in on that point. Just following up on what James was saying there, Mark, he mentioned, you know, if this was a normal group match, Ireland would be looking to get into this game and with 3 points, both home and away for both legs. Is the Irish fans being a bit, you know, pessimistic about that, going over there hoping to get a draw and bringing it back to Dublin?
Yeah, I can see your point of view there. It seems to have become sort of the Irish mentality in recent years to kind of fear the worst and expect the worst, which, you know, I can't really blame you for, you know, after some of the things that have happened. But on paper, like you say, if it was in the group game, you'd expect to beat them home and away. So throw in the cup sort of final effect is going to have an effect. But you're the stronger side, and by rights, you should be going there with confidence. And I agree with everything that the guy said, that a goal is crucial, really. If you could go out there and get a 1-1, it wouldn't be the end of the world. But, personally, I see no reason whatsoever, with the players that you've got, that you can't go out there and win.
Yeah, and Mark, I don't know if you know too much about the Estonian team. We've heard stories that they seem to play a lot better against better teams that they come up against. For example, as James was saying, he was trying to get his head around all week, or he still can't get it out of his head, the fact that they lost to the Faroe Islands, but they managed to beat Serbia and Slovenia. And I guess a lot of people are making the point, Mark, that Estonia are set up the way they play when a team is expected to, you know, control the game against them. That's when Estonia are dangerous. Whereas when Estonia are playing a lesser team like the Faroe Islands, when they're expected to go forward and take the game, they just can't. So if Ireland going into this game as major favourites, could that be the Irish downfall, maybe?
I don't think so, actually. With Trapattoni in charge, I mean, He's a clever tactician, and he will set you up first and foremost to be solid and hopefully get a clean sheet, which would be massive. So I don't see that being a problem with Trapattoni in charge, and particularly the midfield. I mean, obviously, I'm very aware of Glenn Whelan will sit deep and do a shielding job in front of the back four. So I think there's enough steel in the Irish side to keep Estonia at bay whilst also causing them problems going forward. So no, I don't see that being a problem.
Yeah, John, how about that point Mark mentioned about Trapattoni there? And I'll put it to you that when Trapattoni was in these type of games where, you know, Ireland mightn't have done too good in the past against, like, for example, the Cyprus away game, Ireland were set up really kind of, fair enough defensively, but still managed to win the game 2-1. Do you think the Trapattoni effect would get us through these games? And as we've seen, Ireland have been a lot better away from home under Trapattoni and against lesser teams, which we may not have been in the past. For example, you know, we've seen it in the group stages away to the likes of Armenia and Macedonia. The way Trapattoni has set us up, do you think that's put an end to the going away from home to Eastern European or Baltic nations and struggling? Do you think we'll be able to control the game?
Yeah, well, I think one thing you'd have to give Trapattoni credit for is that we don't see to lose any matches against anybody who's ranked below us or seeded below us. It's any times we underperform, kind of, it tends to be when we're playing teams seeded above us where we could go that extra bit and kind of beat them. The likes of the two Bulgaria games where we could have won them, but we drew both of them 1-1. We just kind of lacked that extra bit to go the extra mile to go and beat them. But any teams that are seeded below us, we always seem to do enough, and we don't. We're reasonably organised at the back against the likes of those teams, that they won't tend to get too many chances behind us. It's the stronger teams that usually can get more joy against our defence. But and away from home as well, I think Trapattoni's style is better adapted. Suits us much better away from home. It's a defensive style. When a team's at home, they're the ones they're expected to take the game with a scruff of the neck and come at you more. So that suits us more away from home, and then we can kind of hit them on the counter attack. So from that point of view, yeah, I suppose the away leg, we should hopefully, with a bit of luck, get a clean sheet and maybe nick a goal. That's what we'd be hoping for anyway.
Yeah.
I would say a draw wouldn't be the worst.
Yeah, and a lot of people are saying that Ireland are actually better to watch away from home, and when we're at home and we're expected to take the game to the opposition, we don't do too well. Paul, John mentioned a point about us sometimes lacking against the bigger teams. That's a criticism that Roy Keane has said time and time again. You know, it's typical Ireland, the usual stuff, as he said, afraid to take that extra step. I think the last time I can recall us beating, a seeded team, Paul, was back in a qualifier campaign, was back in 2001 when we beat Holland 1-0. I know some people will argue that Slovakia under Stan at home was a seeded, but I mean a proper seeded team. That's a long time ago, isn't it?
Yeah, it's about 10 years ago, Dave. it is a long time ago, all right, yeah. It's. I mean, away from home, I think it's 21 years or so, 22.
Yeah,
when I was only just sort of started watching Ireland, so I can't pretend I know with distinction that game, but I remember with distinction. But I'm one of those who's as well, again, a bit of a pragmatist when it comes to it. You know, we should be beating them. At the end of the day, we're higher seeded and all this sort of stuff. But it's just every time I've had that feeling of positivity coming into a game, it's generally been shot down by reality. And the reality is that we're not capable of beating bigger teams away from home. We say we're kind of sometimes in the crest of a wave or whatever, and we feel that, you know, this is the time, our time is now to make that. But that's been happening for the last 3 or 4 years. I just think, I mean, if you compare Ireland and begin to near James Caesar, or, you know, sort of from an English side of, or just sort of more of a European side even, you know, if we're Ireland, we look at other teams, third seeds about or so. We'd see them differently to how we see ourselves, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I don't think that's right. Like, I think people are beginning to realise that. I personally am. I still don't advocate the way we play if we're able to play better, but we are getting results, and we can't complain about that at the end of the day. Being a pragmatist, the results are all that matters, really. It doesn't matter how you go about getting them, so long as we get them.
Yeah, Mark, I want to come to you on that. What's the, I guess, that we watch a bit of Ireland in British media as well. What's the attitudes in Britain towards this game? Do they think the Ireland have a chance at this? Is there much interest in it?
Oh, there's definitely interest in it. I mean, certainly the people I've been speaking to, you know, well behind Ireland. I'll pick up on a point that Paul just made about, you know, you seeing the team differently to maybe the way other people see it. And I think that's quite right. I don't see Ireland as a team that is underachieving. Rather, I see it as a team that is greater than the sum of its parts. which I put very much down to Trapattoni. So I think that you're a better side than Estonia, and being a pragmatist myself, like Paul, I would hope and expect you could go on to beat those. But similarly, against the likes of France, Italy, those sort of nations, I wouldn't expect you to get results. So I think you're about where you deserve to be and where I'd expect you to be, really.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, if we're looking at, say, typical British countries involved, and, of course, Ireland have been somewhat, you know, England have always been, you know, the team to get to major tournaments, and if not, it's been Ireland in, well, we haven't qualified, say, for since 2002. Do people in Britain view Ireland as kind of the second team, as in, you know, the team behind England were better than, say, Scotland and Wales? Because I know for a few years there, a lot of people, especially in Ireland and the UK, would have viewed Ireland as in the similar category to Wales, Scotland, and even Northern Ireland.
No, we certainly wouldn't view you in that bracket anymore. You're clearly the second best, if you like, of the home nations.
Yeah.
If you want to be classed as a home nation. So, yeah, you are definitely on the different level to the Wales and the Scotlands and Northern Ireland of the world. But you're probably slightly below still the Englands of the world. And as you know, England aren't having a great deal of success ourselves. So I think you've got to be realistic of your expectations. But yeah, optimistic at the same time, because on your day you are capable of sort of shocking any team, really.
Okay, I want to move on, lads, to the team, the players that are available to Trapattoni in this game. James, we've had a few injuries going into this clash. Obviously, Robbie Keane has come back. He's played for the LA Galaxy and he's scored a goal, as debatable as the MLS is. It's 50-50, according to Marco Tartelli, whether it's going to be Jonathan Walters or Simon Cox partnering him up front. Early signs is that Stephen Kelly is going to get the nod at right back, so it would be pretty much the same as we've expected. But what do you think? What do you think of our team going into this one? Do you think it's going to be Johnny Walters, Robbie Keane up front?
Well, I think Walters was very impressive for the time he came on against Armenia, and I know Simon Cox got a lot of praise as well, but I actually thought Walters was far more effective. And the kind of general thinking is that Cox and Keane are similar type of players, are similar in physical stature. So I think maybe Walters might be the guy to go with in an away game, a hostile atmosphere. I don't think Trapp's going to spring any surprises, but if we really wanted to get into it, I would prefer Stephen Hunt to start in place of McGeady. I have been very unimpressed with McGeady in recent games, especially in a defensive sense, and I think we know the limits of the central.
Is that not a bit unfair, James, to say you've been unimpressed with him in a defensive sense, considering the amount of the workload that he put in, say, in Moscow against Russia, when he literally covered that left-back situation, which Stephen Ward had been letting the Russians cut him open time and time again?
Well, I grant that the Russia game he was much improved, but I would challenge anybody to watch McGeady when Ireland don't have the ball. And he's literally walking around the pitch today. He's not tracking back. He will come in with a telling intervention on occasion, but I think someone like Hunt, when you're away from home, is going to offer you much more of a shield to Ward. Now, I know a lot of people would disagree with that, and McGeady is seen as one of our kind of attacking outlets with Duff, because the two in the middle don't offer a hell of a lot of creativity. But if McGeady's not firing, everything goes down to Duff. And in my opinion, McGeady hasn't been firing as well as he should be.
But what about that, John? You know, Aidan McGeady, I guess, has at least been, obviously, the Russian league or whatever, but he's been getting his game. Duff has drifted in and out of that Fulham team. And the point James actually made about Stephen Hunt, a lot of people are critical of Hunt in the sense that he's almost like, you know, when you play football on a pitch with a load of lads and a dog runs on and he chases the ball no matter where it goes, but yet Hunt can still pull out these wonderful games, and he has been a player for the big occasion. We've seen him playing against Italy and Bari that time. What do you think? Is James being a bit harsh on McGeady there?
Possibly, yeah. I certainly wouldn't have Hunt in ahead of McGeady. No way. I think McGeady, over the campaign, he was disappointed the last game in Armenia, definitely. He wasn't up to it there, but some of his other performances, like Slovakia away, Russia away, he was really good. And I think he's possibly our most creative player and our most dangerous player on his day. This idea of playing him on the left wing all the time and Duff on the right, I don't agree with that, though. I think it limits the two of them. If Duff coming inside on his favourite left from the right and McGeady doing vice versa, they should be mixing up a lot more than that. It's okay to maybe switch him for 10 minutes here and there, but I mean, Duff is a left winger, that's where he should start. McGeady's a right winger, so that's where he should start too. Hunt, I don't think he's impressed a lot for Ireland. The last few times I've seen him, he's loads of energy and he's a lot work rate, big work rate, but I think better as an impact player. And for the last 20 minutes, if anyone's getting tired on the wings, I think that's the time to bring Hunt in.
Okay.
I'd still let McGeady can put a couple of tricks in, you know, and just match that with a final product, which maybe he had lacked in previous campaigns, but hopefully this time he can deliver.
Okay, fair enough. I wanna bring that one. Yeah, I wanna bring that one to Paul. Paul, John was talking about McGeady, and I guess John has used that argument that we hear time and time again about Stephen Hunt being an impact player. But I wanna ask actually about the strike forces and a bit about Trapattoni's comments, because it's almost like, Paul, that Trapattoni, he puts his strikers into certain categories, as in Jonathan Walters was initially a Kevin Doyle type player that you'd hoof the ball up to the big man and he'd try to win a few headers and lay it down for, say, Robbie Keane. Then I think it was said that Jonathan Walters more of a Robbie Keane style player who puts in a shift, and we've seen the actual shift that he put in the Armenia game. He seemed to be all over in that brief cameo that he did. They say Cox is like Doyle or Cox is like Long, but then Cox is like Keane. They sound like they don't know who their best strike partnership is. It's like they change it day by day, Paul.
I'm sure I wouldn't agree with that, the change day by day. I think that's a good thing. We've had a couple of podcasts now where we've mentioned that, Trapattoni and Tardelli are too slow to make changes and introduce players. But we've seen with the strike force, because we have a wealth of decent premiership level strikers in there, that they are willing to actually change it when needed and to suit the occasion. Now that they're injuries, maybe people will say it's forced somewhat, but I reckon he will go Walters and Keane and possibly bring on Cox for Keane after 60 or 70 minutes in Estonia. It's good to see that they are willing to make those changes, and they seem to be adapting their sort of, the scenarios and adapting the situations that we find ourselves in, and adapting are bringing those players for those situations. So seeing them at training every day obviously gives them more of an insight into the player and how it fits into their system. Again, the system is the bigger picture for them. So, I'm happy to see that. I don't care if they keep switching the things. It's not like switching the strike partners or whatever. It's not like under McCarthy where, people blatantly knew he was keeping the same guys or making changes that weren't working. Whereas with Trapp and Tardelli so far, every one they've made, every change that they've made, or every new, starting a new game where they've introduced a new strike partner or whatever, it's worked. It worked with Long, it worked with Doyle initially, worked with Cox in the last game, and whether to bring in Walters this time, I'm 100% sure it'll work. I'm actually really excited about that side of things. It's the left back and other positions where they seem to be slower to make these changes. But yeah, no, I'm sure they do know what they're doing, and I'm very happy with what they're doing personally.
Yeah, I want to ask Mark about, Mark, your opinion, I guess, towards the actual players that are available to Ireland. A lot of people, you look at the Irish team and you might think, oh, well, there's a couple of Premiership players. But I know our Irish fans actually have this view that, say, it's gone for a while that Trapattoni and Tardelli, they don't seem to be picking the best players. I happen to know, you being an avid Stoke supporter, you'll probably be disappointed that the likes of Mark Wilson isn't in the squad. Rory Delap, Trapattoni has said that he wouldn't get in the squad because he's too one-dimensional with the throw-ins. What do you think about the actual Irish players that are there? Should they be at bigger clubs, or are they just about in the right position? Because Trapattoni could pick a full Premiership team, but he doesn't. It's the system that comes first.
I think you know, for any team, the system has to come first. The team is always more important than the players. And Trapattoni is certainly a manager that would stress that point. In terms of the Stoke players that you mentioned, Mark Wilson has actually been playing fullback for us for quite some time now. So I can understand why Trapattoni's maybe not been looking at him, because, you know, you're not looking for him to play fullback. In terms of Jonathan Walters, I can fully understand if Trapattoni is trying and kind of failing to pigeonhole him. I can understand why, because he is very much like Doyle in that he will hold the ball up, he will win his heads, he's fantastic in the air and hold men off. But at the same time, he is similar to Keenan, that he'll run with the ball, he's deceptively quick, and I actually am surprised that it's taken so long for Trapattoni to get him involved. And from an outsider's point of view, that would maybe be my one slight criticism. I often hear Irish fans talking about players he'd like to see called up, players like Walters, Leon Best. I know you were sort of, there was a clamour for a while. And Trapattoni seems to take a little while to latch onto those. Jermaine Pennant's another one at Stoke who said he'd be interested in a call up and hasn't been.
But in fairness, Mark, regarding Jermaine Pennant, was that not all a bit of, like, kind of like the whole Jamie O'Hara thing with Ireland, flirting with the possibility of, you know, getting called up to Ireland for the sake that he was clearly not getting he wouldn't get a look in with England, and that this was his only chance to play a bit of international football and prolong his career. Is that what was going on there?
Well, it's a fair point, and it depends on the sort of the Irish attitude towards those sort of players. But I remember Liam Lawrence, an ex-Stoke player, was quite critical of Pennant at the time, saying, you know, we don't want these players that see us as second best, if you like. Mm. But, and I'm just going to put this out there, if Liam Lawrence, you know, born in Nottinghamshire, if he'd have been called up for England, I personally think he'd have accepted the call. So I find that a little bit hypocritical. You know, if Pennant is good enough to get in the team and other players in a similar situation are good enough, then why not take a look at them, really? But you may disagree, I don't know.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, Mark, and I think a lot of Irish fans, a lot of people say, obviously the Irish want their best team available to them, but it's when there's, say, players that are kind of later on in their career that they're not, say, not declared, that they haven't declared for anybody or whatever, and they seem to be holding out. Like, I'll give you an example. Kieran Clarke from Aston Villa, at the age of 19, he had broken, actually, under Gerard Houllier, he had broken into the Villa team. And he actually declared for Ireland very early on, even though Ashley Cole and the like, or Ashley Young, I should say, had been saying that, you know, he's going to be a world-class player in that. But to declare at such a young age, you know, it proves kind of, for those type of players, even the likes of James McCarthy, there was a lot of, you know, a bit of a struggle with the Scotland, but he had played for Ireland since under 15 level. He was never going to change. Do you know, there is a bit of a difference there, I think.
Yeah, but would you not say that these players that, are holding out and keeping their options open are kind of the next level players? If you accept, as you mentioned earlier, that England are on a slightly different level to Ireland, if there's a player that thinks he may be, you know, nearly good enough, have an outside chance of making the England squad, then, you know, if he's got the choice, perhaps it's only fair that he would hold out and keep that choice, whereas some of the other players might not have that choice. Liam Lawrence, as I mentioned, was never going to get called up for England. Pennant has obviously played for England under 21 side, had that opportunity. So is it not fair that he sort of kept his options open?
I don't know. What do you think about that one there, James? Do you think, I mean, that argument seems to get a lot of, Irish fans seem to be always constantly debating that about. I think the fact is it was with Pennant, and, you know, there had been a lot of them, a lot of it in the press, and the likes of Jamie O'Hara, we all know he kind of fancies himself on the Twitter or that. What do you think about that, James?
Well, we're funny ones, really, because if it turned out that the player was doing quite well, or, you know, had become something of a name in the English game, we would be clamouring for him. That's the way we seem to go. If they're not performing particularly well in the Premier League, and then they flirt with an interest in playing for Ireland, we tend to, you know, we're not that interested in it ourselves. Pennant personally wasn't a goer for me. I think Irish people, we love to hear people say they love us, but we like them to do it early on too. And especially not interested in this kind of, you know, we're close to a tournament, and even like the Stephen Ireland question doesn't go away, and he's from Cork, but people don't want to see him getting in the team. So the chances of someone like Pennant are non-existent, and I don't think he's ever a runner.
Yeah, I think Paul, those types of debates will always be on. Obviously, we have spoken on previous shows about the huge diaspora that Ireland has, which has made a lot of players connected to Ireland in some way, which has benefited us greatly, which is a unique thing about Ireland. And it can be positives in some sense and negatives in other. But should we be more open about things? What do you think?
It's kind of the old saying of if a donkey is born in a stable, doesn't make him a horse. You know, some players straight off have that connection to Ireland and wherever they've grown up, and Kilbane, and we've spoken about it before, and, you know, other such players are kind of, this term mercenaries, are trying to maybe not necessarily extend their career, but enhance their career, and they choose to be representing international football. Tardelli himself came out and said it today, that, you know, a lot of the players will be needing contract extensions and stuff like this. The debate is endless on the whole thing. It's a big thing in rugby as well, and it doesn't seem to dilute the interest too much. Although personally, I think it's a joke in rugby, but I think we have a far way to go to reach that in sort of football terms.
Jermaine Pennant, that in particular case, I don't think he ever had any intention of playing for Ireland, really. You could tell straight away his attitude, the way it was on it. It was just a kind of half thing, just to mention, just to almost a publicity thing. If he wanted to play, he would just come out and declare it, and that's it. That'd be it. I mean, you know, what was he waiting for? What was the hold up? He knows the situation. If you want to declare the team, you just declare it, and that's it.
I don't know if I give Pennant that much credit. I mean, he left a lovely sports car in the airport in Madrid, I believe, or maybe not Madrid, so I wouldn't give him too much credit on that. But yeah, he was probably just dallying and putting it out there, maybe hoping that by saying that, England might actually give him a call-up. I don't know if he was that smart, or his agent maybe was, but Pennant probably was more of a thing. I think O'Hara never really committed either. We never felt that with him. There's others that never, you know, really committed because the door was always half open for England. Someone like Liam Lawrence, I don't think the door was ever half open. He was 24, 25, and, you know, and he obviously realised, whereas O'Hara still has that. It'd be interesting to see how Anthony Pilkington goes if he gets called up.
A point about, I think Liam Lawrence, actually, he played in, I think it was a friendly for Ireland years ago, and I think obviously that rule had changed where, you know, if you could actually declare for another country if you played only in a friendly, and that, I think, there was probably never any doubt in his mind. But as you said, the Anthony Pilkington one is another one. He's an exciting young player. Mark, do you know much about Pilkington now? He seems to be doing the business at Norwich City. He played for the Ireland under 21s and, you know, a lot of Irish fans aren't sure if he's going to declare for our senior team.
Dave, don't be telling him too much now. He might be.
I know.
It's funny to say that because I didn't realise that there was any sort of doubt about his eligibility for England. I just presumed he would go on to represent your senior team.
Yeah.
And I can understand fully why there's a clamour for that to happen because, you know, you mentioned you had a little debate about the wingers earlier. And from what I've seen of him so far this season, he's been one of the unsung heroes, if you like, of the Premier League. He's got speed. He loves to take a man on. He can cross a ball. And on current form, I would place him ahead of Hunt, certainly. Not seeing a lot of McGeady with him being out in Russia. So, if you can get him called up into that team, I think he could have a big future for you.
Yeah, Mark, how important is it for Ireland to qualify for the Euros in terms of getting players like a lot of, say, our English-born players that have, say, Irish parents or that, getting that interest in the Irish team? You know, it's a problem that, say, the likes of Northern Ireland, Scotland and Wales have had, is in their you know, the sport might have died down in Wales, but I guess for the Irish diaspora, how important is it? Because we know how many Irish people are residing in Britain. I guess it would be a big lift for the Irish families that are living over there as well if Ireland were to qualify for Euro 2012.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I mean, it would certainly make you a more attractive proposition, and I think, like you say, it's the awareness of the Irish national side more than anything. If people are aware that you've got a good side and it's doing well and it's getting or having a chance of getting to major tournaments, then people that have got Irish heritage may think, well, hang on a minute, you know, there's a chance of international football here, a very good side, and that might make them stand up and you know, and have a think. So I suppose it is important, but going back to the earlier point, if the Irish national side is looking for people that are truly committed and truly want to play for you, then you would hope that success doesn't come into it and they really want to play for you to represent the country. So it's a tough one.
Yeah, and Mark, a final point. We don't, like, obviously a lot of Irish people, they don't want more Stephen Ireland's coming along, you know, with that. I mean, he's probably not just one of the few in Ireland, if the only type of person from Ireland that's grown up as a footballer not wanting to play for the country, but actually one of the few in the world. I know you do have players retiring from international football at a young age, but having players like Stephen Ireland that just have a complete disregard and no interest in the first place, really, that's very unusual, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very strange. I mean, I think we can all agree that Stephen Ireland's kind of one in a million. He's a very interesting, shall we say, character, so I don't know how much you can read into that. I really do think he is just one in a million. I'm not sure it's part of a wider problem, but you may put me wrong.
Yeah, well, it certainly has looked like as karma has come back to bite him in the backside. Anyway, lads, I just want to move you on quickly before we go, and just a quick mention on the under-21 team that's going to be taking on Liechtenstein. On a lot of the forums, lads, there's been calls for players in the squad. We seem to have those players in the squad now. The likes of Jeff Hendrick, he seems to be doing terrific for Derby County, a 19-year-old Dubliner. We have Daniel Kearns, who got 20 minutes there last weekend for Peterborough, and a few other players. It seems like Noel King Paul has been reading the internet forums or letting the press pick his team for him, because it seems like all the exciting players that could be in it are in it.
Well, our plan has paid off then, hasn't it, Dave?
Yeah,
I think compared to I think Noel, or I won't say Martin King for a minute, I think he you know, he's come with a fresh attitude and a bit of initiative and a bit of spark about him. Whereas, looking at the likes of Don Givens, it was just a cash cow, I reckon, almost for him, just happy to sit out and take his money from the FAI. King's come in, he's done a very good job so far. He's made them very competitive and he's given debuts and he's bringing in the players that everybody's talking about that are in, not just on the forums, obviously, but
yeah,
he has his scouts or whatever and anything else. But those that are performing and that are attracting headlines, I was going to say across water, but over here. And it's great to see. There's some exciting players coming through as well. I always feel like that, you know, the under-21s is the feeder to the senior team. So if somebody's old enough, they're good enough and should come straight through to the seniors. But getting winning mentalities is a good thing also. So playing an under-21, getting a bond, winning a few games, it has to, you know, bode well for them in the future. And I think that's another good thing to see. So all positive thus far on the on King's sort of, not that short, but the last year
yeah.
or so
yeah.
in charge, like.
Okay, John, there seems to be a bit of an openness from Noel King that we haven't really seen at the underage true FAI levels in a long time. We've seen bust-ups from Billy to Joe to Jack, you know, rows with players not answering their phones, and but we haven't really seen that with King. And an example being Robbie Brady, there was a bit of controversy over him not representing our under-19s in the European Championships, but however, Noel King made a call, actually went to meet the guy, sorted a few things out. He's in the squad and he's one of the main men for our under-21s.
Yeah, I think that's good to see. I'm not pointing the finger or anything in particular, but I think a lot of that possibly went on under Don Givens when he was there. I think there was a lot of arguments over different things with players. I think it's good to see. We've had so many arguments with players and James McCarthy, Stokes, people, things made up. This has obviously gone up to senior level, but it's affected Ireland a lot. Players who just, whatever, fall out or a lack of communication, and just a failure on the manager just to maybe ring up. I know they say the onus on the players, but some of these players wouldn't think of it, aren't the cleverest, you know, to pick up the phone or just to use the currency, the common currency to do it. So it's good to see a manager, I think, take the approach and smoothing these things over. I mean, the extreme case, you could say, was Roy Keane McCarthy, when who knows if McCarthy had just brought it up with Keane separately on his own and spoke it out in private, they could have had it out and that'd be it done. But a lot of times, and maybe it starts at under 21 level and creeps up.
But it seemed to be, John, a lot of people, John, argue that there had been, all up through the years, I've heard recent arguments that years ago, even for our women's teams, they didn't seem to get looked after as they should have been. Had that seemed to be a problem right up through, I mean, obviously outspoken people like Roy Keane and Stephen Ireland would have mentioned it, but yeah. I mean, he'd say anything for headlines, but no, has that been a bit of a problem with this Irish team, players that didn't really want to play?
Possibly so, yeah, it's hard to say really, but anyone you would talk to is going to want to play for the country, but individual circumstances are going to come up. Players can be under pressure from clubs, listening to agents, clubs pay their wages, or they could genuinely have injuries that aren't picked up fully on scans or anything like that. It's hard to say really, but we've a reasonably good squad out for this game against Liechtenstein, the under-21s. There's a few good prospects there, genuine prospects for the future. The ones that stick out would be Shane Duffy, Greg Cunningham, Brady, obviously, Hendrick, yeah, as well, Daniel Carroll's at Peterborough. You could even say one or two that didn't make us, like I think Joe Mason there from Cardiff,
yeah.
He's doing well as well. A couple of others, injuries, Royce Murphy, I think, Connor Henderson as well. But we have Connor Clifford is in the squad as well. So it's reasonably strong, I think, and Carl Shepherd as well, League of Ireland player, Shamrock Rovers.
Yeah, good season. Well. Good season he's had as well. So
yeah,
it's great.
Absolutely.
And,
yeah,
and as you mentioned, sorry, the League of Ireland. I just want to bring in James on that. James, I don't know, had you watched the FAI Cup final at the weekend?
I did. I saw pretty much all of it up to the penalties. And
can I just put it to you, James? A lot of people are saying that it was really just depressing to see it go all the way to penalties. A lot of people wanted the game just to be over with. But I mean, Shelburne, for a team with 10 men, they ran Sligo right to the end. By the end of it, both teams, I suppose, looked knackered. What did you make of it all?
I thought it was a good game. I thought Shelburne did very well, given that the sending off was a complete joke, to be honest. I think they've come up from the back into the Premier Division, got promoted again after a couple of years in the wilderness, restructured the club, gave a good account of themselves, and, you know, they did brilliantly to take the penalties. Alan Matthews wouldn't have complained that his 10 men survived that long. But I will say one thing, being a goalkeeper myself, I thought the substitution... I thought it was shocking. And I know Paul Cook will say it paid off and he won the cup again for Sligo, two in a row. But every young goalkeeper kid dreams of being the hero in a cup final in a penalty shootout. And Cook denied Clark that by subbing him. And I know Trapattoni and Tardelli were at the game and they said the same thing. But Paul Cook won and that's what he's in the business for.
Yeah, Mark, have you ever seen anything of the likes where a team is about to go into a penalty shootout and the goalkeeper that's been kept the team, I suppose, in the game and has done a good job gets subbed right before the penalties? Is that not the most disrespecting thing a manager can do to a keeper to show their lack of confidence in him? Or can it be a tactical masterstroke? I know it did pay off for Sligo, but have you ever seen the likes over in Britain or that?
I've not, no, I was aware of this happening actually, and I fully agree with what James and yourself have said. It is the almost the biggest kick in the teeth you could possibly have to have helped your team get that far and then be hauled off and said, hang on a minute, you know, this lad's a better penalty stopper than you. So must have been pretty heartbreaking. Obviously winning will have helped ease that. But yeah, it's Well, fair play to the manager for having the balls, if you like, to do that, because it's a brave decision that if they'd have lost, you know, a lot of stick would have come back to him. So I suppose the result is the main thing, but tough thing to do that.
Yeah, and Paul, just a final point to you before we close the show about the FAI Cup final. We've seen the likes. I was at the game on Sunday, and what I personally noticed was Sligo obviously brought down the whole county, we'll say, or close to it, to the match. And Shelburne's fans, there was a good few there, but there wasn't too many. Is it a case that there's the league has, say, too many for a small country? Dublin has, say, too many teams. I know a lot of the Dublin clubs won't be happy with me saying that, but you don't get the same, whereas the likes of Sligo and that, and we've seen it with Monaghan getting promoted to the Premier Division as well. It's almost like a whole county supporting them. Whereas Dublin is so kind of broken up, you have the likes of, I think there's about seven clubs that are playing almost top flight in Ireland.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not an expert on this, and
yeah,
I have a few opinions on it. I probably am seen by some as a barstooler, so I wouldn't like to fell anyone. But yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's sustainable, the amount of clubs that we have currently, particularly around the area in Dublin, although the fact that the area and the population, you know, is a lot more compact compared to, say, a county size is obviously quite significant. I mean, I grew up in a small town in the west of Ireland, and, you know, the closest club for me is probably 40 miles. I think I mentioned this before, but my father wasn't really into soccer or football, whatever you want to call it. So, you know, I never really had any attachment to any club. You'll see, like, once yearly, you'll see everyone in Sligo supporting Sligo Rovers.
But yeah,
I mean, they'd be lucky to get 3,000 at a big home game. Like, I even noticed myself just looking on Facebook and things like that. Like, you know, there's people saying, well done, the bit of red and all this. And I never even heard them mention that they supported Sligo Rovers before. But there were Sligo people themselves. But
Sligo till I die.
Yeah, all this sort of stuff. I mean, for sure, if you ever go up to Sligo, you'll always see them selling the raffle tickets and stuff, which I put on record that I obviously always buy. They all are selling their raffle tickets in the shopping centre and out and about and stuff, which is really good. So it is well supported in that sort of sense. But I mean, you know, the whole county kind of turns red for these one-off occasions. But generally, it's not as well supported as you know, when they, like Rovers, like or Shamrock Rovers are the bigger clubs in Dublin. I do think it's a pity that Galway have gone the way they've gone. It's just more of a football and hurling, and
yeah,
much the rugby now is kind of taken over as well. It's just a pity that it has gone. But geographically, if you could get something like a Derry, a Galway, a Sligo, a Cork, and two from Dublin.
An intercounty competition, Dublin North and Dublin South. You should never mention that to League of Ireland fans. They just won't buy that either.
Yeah,
there was another one, Paul, that was suggested, go interprovincial, kind of like the rugby is Munster, Leinster, Connacht, Ulster, and join up with the best teams in the Scottish League and the best teams in the Welsh League and have this all kind of Celtic League, what they do in rugby as well. Wouldn't work because I think it breaks UEFA's rules in terms of having clubs playing inter-country competitions, you know.
Yeah, exactly. That's the problem with that. I mean, rugby is lucky. There's only eight teams really in rugby that compete to a decent level, let's be honest. And well, maybe 10, but you know, they're not bounded by these things, and the IRFU is far more. It's less stiff that's the wrong word, rigid in its rules. Although now that you've mentioned that, I wanted to bring this up, especially that we have our friend from the UK, although all three of us are living
in
the UK.
Yeah.
But the political influence in FIFA, I don't want to digress too much, but the political influence in FIFA that we were told never existed, and that FIFA were today by Prince Harry or Prince William and the Prime Minister asking about the poppy appeal. Now, I'm a pacifist and coming from a neutral country. I don't want to be, you know, sparking a verbal war or anything. But, you know, I do think that whatever side you take, whatever you believe in the poppy and whether it was wherever it was a factory for ex-servicemen and whatever else, there's still two people from certain countries, Ireland being one of them, I'm sure others, possibly Spain, even with the Civil War and the UK influence and that, you know, the poppy isn't seen as just something that's there for to help people along the way. It is seen as a thing to for the British Army and has been seen as a form of occupation, whatever else. I just think that, you know, FIFA always say that they're religiously, politically and commercially, they can't be seen to be allowed to wear anything on their jerseys. But political influence has clearly won the day here when David Cameron and Prince William came out and actually, you know, got the poppy overturned on the jerseys. I don't know if everyone's aware, but basically England are going to be allowed to wear their poppies on their jerseys for the friendly in Wembley. I'd like to hear other people's opinion on that. I don't mean to take over there, Dave, but and digress slightly, but it was it kind of, you know, I found very hypocritical of FIFA, to be honest.
I don't know. What do you think of that, Mark? Do you think it's hypocritical of FIFA, or is it just, you know, I mean, what harm is it doing? I mean, it's not going to bring about a whole new, all the, say, the FIFA countries now throwing a few emblems on, slapping badges onto international jerseys. You might find a few more, say, shamrocks now on Ireland jerseys and all that kind of thing. Do you think that's UEFA allowing things to go on, or what do you make of it?
I don't think it's hypocritical. No, at the end of the day, FIFA are in control of that themselves. I don't consider the poppy to be a frivolous, you know, a frivolous sign, if you like. So they have made an exception in this instance. That's not to say they'd have to make an exception in other instances.
Yeah.
So I don't think they've, you know, kind of made a rod for their own back or anything like that. I can absolutely see both sides of the argument about whether it should be allowed or not. But no, I don't think they'd have been hypocritical in backing down.
Yeah, that's fair enough. And John, I just want to bring a final point about the FAI to you. The FAI went with their €10 a ticket and €5 a ticket to the FAI Cup final again, along with, which is interesting, we've seen a couple, two months back or that, the showgrounds in Sligo have been sold out for the under-21 matches, which I think it was a fiver a ticket for those games. Are they starting to see a bit of sense? Are they doing the right? They seem to be doing the right thing ticket-wise. It's more for the fans. Are they becoming a little more economically aware?
Yeah, well, that was certainly a good move. That started last year, and the point last year was Sligo Rovers against Shamrock Rovers, and they dropped the tickets to €10, and it was 36,000 at it, which there wouldn't have been anything. Well, you'd be looking to get 10, 15 maybe, if it was, say, 20, 25 quid. Maybe 20,000 at a push, but certainly that drove the numbers up a lot. I think the FAI have a long way to go before we can start saying they're doing a really good job. Like, we're just talking about the League of Ireland there a few minutes ago. Really, the problem with League of Ireland starts at the foundation level. If you go around to any towns, villages, cities in Ireland, the youth in the community, it's all really GAA. GAA are the main ones who are there getting players, getting kids in basically from under eights, even below that. I mean, I know in a nursery, and there's a few nurseries around Dublin from GAA to get kids in when they're 5 years of age.
Yeah.
And onwards, and they bring it in, they make it about the community and everything like that. And raffles, just fundraising. But
John, just to pick you up on a point like that, I'll give you an example of a local team up my way. Say, for the local soccer club, it was always about, you wanted to join, you go for trials. Five out of ten times you might be told no. The local GAA club, everybody can play. There's a team for you.
Exactly, and there's different teams, and yeah, there can be kind of an elitism thing with, I don't know, with maybe some of the people involved with soccer at the grassroots level as well. So, there's no connection to the League of Ireland. There's not enough anyway from a young point of view. I mean, if you get to do some deals like that with kids, I mean, you want to really get skills involved. Bring them to Bohemians, bring them to Shelburne, whatever team is around the country, Galway United, get kids going to, say, Galway United, and not just, say, the Galway County ground. Because if you give a kid 9, 10, whatever, a scarf and something like that from an early age, they'll have it in their room, they go around with it, they associate that with the team, and they'll associate the area with their team. I think most people in Ireland will automatically, whatever county they're from, any kind of crack or banter, slagging with other counties, it all relates to GAA. It's all ahead of bet. You know, the soccer is almost looked at as completely different, where people support English or Scottish teams or whatever, more so. So you have to get people at a young age, really, from a change of attitude point of view, and to get them involved. Because at the moment, a lot of people just kind of don't go for whatever reason, you know. But the fact that Shamrock Rovers got to the group stages of the Europa League, and other teams like Bolton have been knocking on the door for a few years, there is potential there. But it's the fans that make it. And like when you look at the state Bolton at the moment, I mean, it'd be a terrible shame if they do have to sell Daly Mount.
Yeah.
The most historic ground in Ireland, really, football ground. I mean, Ireland used to play there for years. So it'd be a sad day if that had to be sold for developers. I know they were going to sell it under different circumstances a few years ago, for a lot of money. But from my point of view, I don't think they do enough promotion-wise or at grassroots level at all. There's obviously we're a sport in my country, but there's just... the demand would be there, but we're just not tapping into it in the right way at all, in my opinion, anyway.
Well, it remains to be seen what happened, and, you know, a lot of people say if the GAA were running the soccer in the country, they could actually probably stage World Cup with the availability of GAA grounds to such an event. Well, I'm afraid we've run out of time here on the Why Big Footy Show. My thanks to Paul in London. Thanks a million, Paul.
Thanks, Dave, man.
John in Dublin. Thanks, John.
Thanks, Dave. See you.
James making his debut in, he's in London making his debut on the show today. Thanks, James.
Cheers, Dave. Thanks very much.
And finally to our special guest, Mark Holmes from about every media organisation in the world. You've done a terrific job on your debut on the show, and we hope to have you again soon. Thanks, Mark.
Cheers, Dave. I really enjoyed it.
You're listening to The World's Talking with Dave O'Grady. Don't forget, if you have a story, an internet forum, a discussion you want to have, email theworldstalking@gmail.com. That's theworldstalking@gmail.com. Don't forget to click like on Facebook, like on Twitter, like on everything, and we'll chat to you then.